Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And you heard me say it to wrap up the last hour. Yes, can you believe it? Yes, there is going to be a live sporting event this weekend. Yeah, we had the NFL draft. That was live and real, but it was a draft. This is actual sporting event, something that we can talk about. And somebody who covers the UFC for ESPN, Brett Okamoto, is on the line with us. Brett, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. This is going to happen, right? This is not some big giant tease. This is going to go off tomorrow night.
That would be a pretty cruel thing, I think, for the UFC and ESPN and everybody else involved to have this new big tease. But yeah, man, I mean, I remember when Dana White, you know, obviously the president of the UFC, came out and said, yeah, we're going to do this thing on May 9th. It was met with so much skepticism, which I understand. You know, when I was tweeting about it or putting it on Instagram, social media, a lot of the response was, this is never going to happen. You know, they had canceled five or six events up to that point. And I was like, you know what? I actually think this is going to happen, though. I think the UFC, I knew that all the work that they were doing behind the scenes and how committed they were to doing it. So I'm not surprised to see it actually going off this weekend.
How difficult do you think? Because we've been saying on this show, I mean, we're sitting here talking 4 hours a day about sports that isn't happening. So we understand, you know, everybody's dealing with a lot of difficult stuff. Ours is a lot less than trying to figure out the safety for fighters and putting on something, you know, where everybody can be safe. And how difficult was it behind the scenes to make all of this, you know, get to this point?
Very, very difficult. You know, I think there were plans A, B, C, and D, you know, by the UFC, just especially like a month ago when it just seemed like, and it still is the case now, but particularly a month ago when it just felt like everything was changing literally by the hour, you know, that like they were getting an idea of, you know, maybe we could go here or maybe we could go there or we have some support to go here or there. And then just as more data was coming in and the situation just around the country was getting worse, it felt like, you know, a month ago. Just the situation continued to change, you know, and that was impacting the athletes who, you know, would say like, all right, I'll agree to this date. Where are we going? We don't know where we're going, you know, but we're going to keep training in the hope that it happens. And then fights are being canceled and moved around. So it was very, very difficult. And I haven't even mentioned, you know, just the protocols and the procedures that they had to come up with to make it then safe when it actually did go off. So I think it was more difficult a month ago. When things were changing so quickly. But I think the UFC was always pretty confident that they could put together a plan. They just needed things to sort of kind of calm down, or they just needed a location, you know, where they had permission to do it, they had support to do it, and then they could implement that plan that they've been working on.
The UFC has brought fight cards to Nashville. We've unfortunately never had a pay-per-view card, but I have been to many, many pay-per-view cards around the country, so I understand how the whole dynamic works. I know how today works. I've been to weigh-ins. It's a big deal, especially out in Vegas. I've been there with, you know, thousands and thousands of people at the weigh-in, so I understand how it all works. How different is the entire routine that the UFC's been doing for almost 20 years now? How different, Brett, is it going to look today, tomorrow? I don't know, kind of take us behind the curtain a little bit. By the way, is the media allowed to even cover this? Is media allowed to be there?
You know, I've talked to some people that are on the ground. I'm not there in Jacksonville, but I've been, you know, staying in contact with some of the media that I know, obviously. And they believe that they will be allowed into the arena. They still haven't been told exactly where they'll be. I don't think that there's any chance that there'll be a press row at all, you know, but I think that they'll be in some type of room, you know, probably sitting apart from one another, and then maybe they'll bring in a fighter and do some type of, you know, scrum interview. And in terms of just, you know, how things have been different, I think that they've been drastically different in some sense, but then also familiar in some other ways. You know, I mean, these guys are used to going to a hotel, you know, all week. They check in, they have a lot of media obligations. This week there was kind of less media obligations just because, you know, you can't be seeing media up close and in person. I mean, they did, again, like a scrum type video conference call where just all the media was called in and they could ask questions, you know, over their phone while the athletes sat there on a video conference call, like a Zoom meeting basically. But other than that, you know, and getting their temperature taken and kind of having to go through those medical screenings, those additional medical screenings, these guys are cutting weight, you know. I mean, that's a typical fight week. So they're not really, like, high energy. Occasionally they might walk around to just take their mind off of it and get out of their hotel room. But by and large, I mean, they're working out a little bit, they're staying fresh, and they're dropping their weight so they can make weight on Friday. So I actually think that these guys were able to get tunnel vision, and even though they were in a hotel that was a lot more empty than it usually is, you know, usually you got fans trying to come
right,
around and
everywhere.
Meet them, and
yep.
You got a bunch of media obligations. I think like the process of making weight and now going out and fighting has been probably pretty familiar to him.
The sport feats, and I realize we can't be choosy in these times. Right now, we're just talking about actually something live that's going to happen tomorrow that we can actually talk about over the weekend and on Monday's show. So we can't be choosy about this. But like I said, I've been to these events, and I know this sport in particular, how much it feeds off the crowd and the atmosphere. It's fantastic live and in person. I mean, it's dynamic, and the fighters feed off that as well. It actually comes through the television screen when you're watching it too. That's going to be weird, right? I mean, that none of that dynamic. I know Dana White has said, hey, this sport was built, you know, the UFC fighter, Ultimate Fighter actually helped build the sport, and I agree with it, but that's still going to be, it's going to be a different deal watching it with nobody in the stands, right?
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it is going to feel different. And, you know, coaches are taking that into account where everything that they say, you know, their opponent can hear, the judges sitting cage side can hear. It's different, you know, and again, I think that there is some familiarity from the people involved, because a lot of times, you know, on the regional circuit, before you make it to the UFC, you're fighting in front of crowds that aren't very big. So I think that these guys do have some experience in terms of, you know, fighting in front of crowds that are very small. But there's a difference even between a small crowd and then no crowd whatsoever. But, you know, I heard you guys kind of closing the last hour, and that's how it is. You know, I think that the other sports are going to experience that as well. You know, I mean, when NBA picks up and a guy hits a game-winning three-pointer and no one goes crazy, like that's going to feel weird for a while. But I think that that's probably the way it's going to be for a little bit.
And especially crowning champs, right? I mean, we've got an NFL team and a National Hockey League team, you know, two professional sports teams in our town, and they could, you know, the Predators could win the Stanley Cup literally in front of no one and not have a parade too. Like, how weird would that be for a city and a market?
Yeah, and I think about like a guy like a Tony Ferguson, you know, at the main event, and even Justin Gaethje as well. You know, neither of these guys have ever had a official UFC title fight. Tony Ferguson has had an interim before, and this is an interim title fight. But you think about, you know, the long journey that they've had to get here and how important of a fight this is in their careers, and you know, to get a belt handed to them after what I think is probably going to be a really good fight. You know, I think it's going to be a close fight. If it plays out like a lot of people think it's going to, it's going to be back and forth, you know, and so to put in a full camp, to go out there and have potentially a real tough fight and then, you know, achieve something that you've been working for a very, very long time. And then I don't think they're even going to interview them in the octagon, you know, because they don't want an additional person coming in with a microphone and talking to them. So it's a crowning achievement, like you just mentioned. And in this case, you know, in an individual sport, a tough sport, and they're not going to get sort of, you know, that moment where you know, they can experience it with the fans. And that's another part where they're really feeding off the crowd. You know, I've seen a lot of people deliver some great post-fight interviews and speeches because they're feeling that energy of the people, you know, that are cheering for them. And now it's like, you know, that energy is not going to be there. So it's tough, man. It's not ideal, but it is what it is right now.
Well said. Brad Okamoto on the line with us, covers MMA, UFC for ESPN, and UFC 249 will be in Jacksonville, Florida tomorrow night, and it's a stacked card. I do want to ask you about this card. A good friend of mine here in Nashville who's very, very close with Dominic Cruz and has been close with him for a long time, and I've been fortunate enough to be around them a little bit. He has got quite the unique story, right? I mean, wow, what a journey, and here he is, still back at it, and right there on the main event on this fight card. I mean, the last two fights of the night should be just outstanding. What do you make of Dominic Cruz's fight to kind of finish out the night? I guess it's the second-to-last fight.
Yeah, I actually wrote in an email to somebody. We were talking about, you know, discussing this fight and some like a UFC 249 pre-show content. And I said, Dominic Cruz has one of the most interesting careers, I think, in the sport's history. I mean, this is a guy who legitimately, I thought, you know, years ago, what had the potential to be the greatest fighter of all time. Just the way he fought, how smart he was, how well prepared he always was. He was big for the weight class, but he also had the best cardio. I mean, usually the biggest guy in the weight class can't go the longest. He can't fight for 25 minutes because he's the bigger guy. But Cruz, because of his work ethic and just his intelligence, I mean, he was turning himself into a perfect fighter. And then his body just refused to cooperate with him. He had torn ACLs. He had a quad injury, very severe quad injury. He's had a broken arm, shoulder injuries. He's lost probably, when it's all said and done, about 5.5 years of activity over the last 9 years of his career. It's insane what this guy has been through and has still been able to come back. And today, this morning, he weighed in because the official weigh-ins are the day before the fight. And he was the first one there. And just for people who are unaware, the weigh-ins are terrible, man. I mean, you feel awful. It's tough to get your body down to that weight. And here he was, you know, he hasn't fought in 3.5 years. He was the first guy on the scale. I mean, this guy is just a very, very dedicated athlete, and had injuries not derailed his career, I think we might be talking to him in the same light as we talk about, you know, a George St. Pierre and a John Jones. And that's why he's getting a title fight. You know, you don't see guys getting a title fight after 3.5 years off, but that's why Dominic Cruz is getting it, because of what he's done in his career. And if he beats Cejudo, it's going to be one of the best stories that we see all year.
Brett Okamoto is with us talking some UFC, and the first fight on the pay-per-view card features Greg Hardy. And when I saw that, it was brought to my attention, I was like, okay, there you go, Dana, trying to get a storyline, so to speak, with Greg Hardy on the card. But what do you make of that bout?
Yeah, I mean, the UFC continues to put Greg Hardy in these big spots, and I think the narrative around him has kind of changed a little bit. Maybe not, you know, maybe it's because I am covering the sport on a day-to-day basis. So in terms of, you know, Greg Hardy's past, it's always still there. It's always still worth mentioning. I mean, it's part of who he is, and it's a big part of his story. It's why he's in MMA and not in the NFL. But I think, you know, for people who have been following his career from the beginning in terms of MMA, it's like, okay, we get it. You know, we understand his past and why he's here, and whatever your personal feelings are of it, you know, there's only so much you can say about it. And now you're starting to look at him as an athlete, and is he going to be good at this thing or not? And so far he has been. He's been very good. I mean, he's been ahead of schedule. I thought that when they brought him into the UFC, it was going to be way too quick, and they've done a good job of matchmaking him with some guys who I wouldn't say are terrible opponents, but they're manageable, you know, and he's performed well at times. He's performed poorly in others. But when he fought his last fight, he flew all the way to Russia and fought a guy who has got over 30 professional fights, and he lost. But he didn't look outclassed. And for a guy to only be training for the last 3 years and to fight a guy who's been training for more than 10 years and to not look outclassed in this sport, that's really saying something. So whatever your feelings are of Greg Hardy, he does appear to be pretty darn good at this. And we'll see. We'll just see if that evolution continues. He's fighting the guy, Jorgen De Castro, who is kind of similar to him. You know, hasn't been in the sport too long, but he's a strong guy, athletic guy. And there should be a knockout, I think, in that fight. That's what most people would predict anyway.
I look at the prelims card that'll be on ESPN that you don't have to pay for. It won't be on the pay-per-view. And Pettis and Cowboy, they're the, I guess, main event for the prelims. I feel like that's going to be a good matchup, and Dana was smart. The UFC, they were smart in making the prelim card relatively stacked to get people watching and hoping that they will buy the pay-per-view. Right? Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, they had the luxury of, and I mean, I guess you could call it a luxury, but they wouldn't look at it that way, but they had postponed a bunch of events, you know, and when you postpone events, like, those cards had great fights on them, obviously. And, you know, sometimes the schedule, just the sheer amount of fights that the UFC tries to put on, it can lead to some thinner cards. Well, when you don't have a card for 8 weeks, you're going to have a lot of fights built up, you know, some really good fights. So I think they kind of took the best ones that they had and put them together on this one card because, of course, you know, they see it as an opportunity, you know, that a lot of people who maybe don't watch MMA are going to watch on Saturday, and they want to put their best foot forward. So I think it should work out. You know, I mean, the history of sport shows that you can't predict how good a card is going to be. I mean, there have been cards that have looked stacked on paper and that just have fizzled for whatever reason. But, I mean, I would think that with the lineup they have here, I mean, I will just say that I've been covering this sport for the last 10 years, and I would put this in the top 10% of cards, just in terms of depth, you know, good fights, all the way up and down the entire thing.
I agree. I'm excited. Brett, really appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this. Always good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Of course. Stay safe, guys. We'll see
you. All right, you do the same. Brett Okamoto, who covers the UFC for ESPN and ESPN.com, does a really good job. And, yeah, the UFC 249 is going to be in Jacksonville, Florida tomorrow night. And it is that prelim card on ESPN is stacked. I mean stacked. I've seen – these are pay-per-view fighters.
Sure.
These are guys that have been fighting at a high, high level. A lot of them. I mean, Verdum, Cowboy Cerrone, yeah. Anthony Pettis. Are you kidding me? All on the prelim card? That's free?
That's a main event for a regular pay-per-view.
I know. So, you know, Dana White has done it right. Look, he knows. He gets it. You know, he is going to get a lot of eyeballs and a lot of new eyeballs on the product. And I suspect, just like what we've talked about in these times, especially when you put a card like this together, ESPN is going to see record ratings on this, right? They're going to be blown away with what type of ratings they're going to get on Saturday night for this. We will come back. You just made the list at high noon. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Friday. Hope everybody's having a great day to this point. I also wanted to pass along that you can reap the benefits of greater security and more privacy just by getting a tint on your car. I've done it to mine. My wife has done it to hers. Premier Window Tinting. It will customize your vehicle, your residence, or your commercial property. Not only does window tinting discourage theft, but it also can increase your privacy. Premier Window Tinting serving areas here in Nashville, Columbia, Franklin, and Spring Hill. Once again, their areas for Premier Window Tinting, Nashville, Columbia, Franklin, and Spring Hill. You can contact them today at PremierTent11.com. That's PremierTent11, the number 11.com. Guys, we'll have You Just Made the List coming up at high noon, and then we'll do something a little fun at 12:30, trivia at 1 o'clock, and hopefully we'll hear from former Predators captain Mike Fisher before we get out of here today. So a lot more. Still a loaded show to go here on Darren Donick and Chase. How about the path of Greg Hardy? Isn't that amazing?
You broke up there. What did you say about Greg Hardy?
I said, how about the path of Greg Hardy?
Yeah, I know.
And he's on the main card.
Yeah, he'll open
Saturday.
The main card.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here, and I'm definitely going to watch the prelims on ESPN. Usually, I would go to, like, a Buffalo Wild Wings or something and watch the pay-per-view. And with this card, absolutely, I would be there. But, you know, it's not cheap by any means to order it. And, you know, we're not really in a situation where you can get a bunch of buddies together and do a pay-per-view watch party. But I'm thinking about it. I don't know where you're at on it. I know
I'm in the same boat. I'm definitely watching the prelims, and I'm 60,
like, this would be a situation
40.
Where you and I would probably, I mean, this, you know, we've watched UFC fights together. We'd probably get a group or go to somebody's house. But, you know, obviously it's different times right now. So this would definitely be a fight that I would usually watch, but I'm leaning. I don't really have a lean either way. Like you said, $65.
I would say 60-40, 65-35, leaning towards purchasing it.
Okay.
I would say I'm probably going to do it because I don't see my odds lessening.
Yeah.
As we get closer.
And I feel like, too, if I sit there and I watch the prelims, I'll get fired up and won't want to stop.
Mm-hmm. Now, the big question
is, can we do a Zoom party and I'll watch it?
Yeah. Maybe that's not a bad idea. That is not a bad idea at all. Dominic Cruz has a really unique story. Ed Clay is the guy that I was talking about that I used to do shows with for a long time in this market, an MMA hour. And Ed is very close with Dominic Cruz. Very close. And Dominic Cruz used to come on our MMA hour all the time, but he does. I thought Brett really laid it out well, that if it wasn't for all of his injuries, this guy may be the greatest the sport has ever seen. But I'll give it to him. He's dealt with them, and he's still here. He is today, still going. And it didn't push him into retirement or discourage him to say, you know, it's just not worth it. He sits here today, and unfortunately, it cost him 5-6 years in premier time of his career, where who knows what his resume would look like if he was upright and healthy for that time. But the more important thing is, what
who
is this all going to look
fight
like?
Against, fight against?
I'm sorry?
Who was his last fight against?
Dominick Cruz.
Yeah, three. And I know it was 3.5 years ago.
Yeah, it's been, gosh, I think 2016, I think, was his last fight.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Cody Garbrandt, December 30th, 2016.
Yeah. There was a time when Dominick Cruz looked like he could never lose. I mean, you were just never going to beat him, and I just think the injuries, they just kept piling up. But the bigger question is, what is this all going to look like? You know, what is – are they going to be able to pull this off? We don't really know a lot about what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, that I don't know, but I know, like, for Marquise and I, that we watch WWE, I would imagine that it's going to be similar, like, in the look and the feel, with what they've been doing at the Performance Center and having no fans, nobody in the audience. It's probably going to be similar to that. They just have the octagon set up and maybe have a broadcast table. I know Joe Rogan will be a part of it. Have that all set up and just have everybody come to the octagon and do their thing. You have the ref and the two fighters in the octagon at the same time. That's how I would imagine it would be, but we probably won't know for sure. You bring up a good point, though, behind the scenes of what's going on backstage and, you know, where, how far apart are everyone?
How many people are in there? How many, yeah. You know, what is the scene? You know, he brought up, you know, the UFC is known for Joe Rogan and these unbelievable, you know, interviews inside the octagon after a fight. And how's that going to work? I mean, you see the local TV stations here when they go out on the street and they're interviewing people, they've got a mic stand basically, and they're standing, you know, 6 feet away and they're just talking into a mic, right? They're not just the traditional stand up where they're sitting there interviewing somebody that while you are holding the mic and you're interviewing somebody and putting it right there. They've got, like, just a mic stand, and they're 6 feet away. So how's that going to work for the after-the-fight interviews?
It's a good question, and we don't know. I mean, do you just – does a fighter – are they just going to stand up a mic? That's a good question. And have Joe outside the octagon do an interview or
– put on a headset?
Yeah.
Stand-up mic, put on a headset?
Okay, that's a good – that's a good way to think about it, but are you going to want everybody to share a headset? Are you going to change a headset out after?
Yeah, I don't know.
Everyone?
That's a good point. Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe disinfect it. I don't know. That's a good point. I don't know how this is going to work.
But
do you think other sports are going to be watching?
Oh, heck yeah. They should be. I think other sports are going to watch this. They're going to watch NASCAR because while you may immediately react with, well, but it's different. True. But you can still take some things away. And it's like I brought up with Elliot yesterday. I think more than ever, you're going to see more communication between not just the what we call the Big Four, but the UFC, NASCAR, MLS, these other leagues. They're all talking. I mean, they're all going to be talking. And I feel like that if you're Gary Bettman, especially, or Adam Silver, you're going to be sitting there watching this, jotting down some notes, probably like they did with WWE. I think that they paid attention to WrestleMania and the other paper Money in the Bank that's coming up, and that's this weekend too, right, Marquise?
Yep, Sunday.
Yeah, so WWE has their pay-per-view this week, and they've done a lot of pre-tape stuff. This is, of course, going to be live, so it's different, but WWE's been doing live stuff too. So, yeah, I would imagine everybody's paying attention.
Chinese pro baseball league playing with fans in the stands. Up to 1,000 spectators are now allowed into ballparks. ESPN just putting that out there. I just saw that.
Do we think by the fall in this country, like football, when they kick off, will there be any type of fans, you know, number of fans, whether it's 25%? 50%. Do we think it'll happen? Because there's
wants to have happen. Baseball has put that out there that they would like to phase in stages some people in the stands if they can. But you got to get to the point where you're on the field and you're able to play first. I think it's reasonable to if it depends on, you know, what is a reasonable number and how do you staff the stadium accordingly. You know, I think about things like restrooms and stuff. Like what measures you're going to put in with sanitation,
concession
with all
stands,
those things. You know,
standing in line.
Yeah, it's one thing to sit in the stands. You know, I'm sitting in one seat. You guys are 6 feet away, four seats over, or whatever the number is that equates to the right distance. But then when we all go to the bathroom, what happens there? Can
concessions?
That's where
bathrooms.
A lot of the stuff.
Yeah,
concessions, all that stuff. Yeah.
Because you can space people out. You know, you're in charge of tickets. I mean, you can just space people out. I mean, I think that can be pulled off if you're only letting a certain number in, a certain percentage. But you're right. Even smaller groups, well, you can run into each other at the bathroom or at the concession stand line. So how do you handle that? Are the concession stand lines marked like we're seeing in all the stores now?
Yeah, I think you should.
Do you put up a plastic guard and like the gas station, you know, when you go in the middle of the night, they just talk through that little, basically a little hole, and the rest of it's all shielded off? Is that what it's going to be? You're going to be like talking into a little hole, telling them what you want, and the rest of it is all shielded off? I don't know.
How much is going to be app-based with concessions? And that's another thing. You know, we have the technology now that they're going to
encourage. You talking about delivery?
Yes,
yeah. Delivered to you. Yeah,
or have you have to order via the app, and there's a pickup window or something.
Look, how much do you think you just heard?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of innovation that's going to have to take place, right? And the thing is, people will be incentivized and motivated to do these things if it means you can get more people in there. I also think about getting in. How many discussions have we had over the years about getting into Nissan Stadium? You know, that's going to have to be a system, right? You know, lines to get through and to get screened, go through the metal detector, all of those things. You got to get you've been in the past having to get very close to people to do that. So that's something to think about.
You just heard me in the last break set talk to Christy Burkhalter from Franklin Wine and Spirits, and she said curbside pickup has been such a hit. That, you know, they've already been talking about, do we just stay with this? We just roll with this even when we come out of this. Do you think that maybe that is some of the things that we're talking about? Do you think there'll be more of a push for, you know, delivery at these games? You know, maybe it's all, like you said, Chase, it's at base, but, you know, baseball is an older demo. Is your older demo familiar with how to do all that? Are they going to understand how to do that? Do they have phones? I mean, you have to have the equipment to pull it. How much do you think they push some of these things moving forward and beyond? Not just during this, but how much of this stuff sticks?
That's a very good point, Darren, because I don't know. I don't know if you can do that, like, because you are going to have people that just are going to be sitting there going, I don't know how to work this. You know, I don't know. What's an app? You know, I have a flip phone.
And there are places that have it, right? There are places that already have this kind of service if you want
it. No question.
But it's a different thing to say you have to use this.
Right.
This is
the
only
way
you're going to get a hot dog.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. That's the difference. Like, you can use it now, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
But if they said, hey, that's the only way you're going to get your stuff, how do you – what if people aren't equipped to pull that off? They don't understand.
You got to get with the times.
We all know people.
You got to get with the times.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's easy to say that.
I know, but how do you say that to someone who's maybe they're a season ticket holder? Hey, we need you to get with the times and buy a phone.
Well, you have the only thing you can do is have a station where you have people over there willing to help. Like I know the Predators, that it's been in the same place for a long, long time. The fan information, you go up there if you need help. They got people and they know what questions are coming. I have these tickets on my phone. Like, people freaked out when they went away from paper tickets, right? Now it's getting more and more normal. There's still people that really want to have the paper tickets.
Yes.
Still. Mm-hmm. But by and large, it has become pretty easy. and very convenient. You know, if I need to get you some tickets, Darren, if I want to give my tickets to you, I just send you a text, and the information is there. That is a little easier than going down to the will call window and going. And then you have to go to the will call window. You got to put them in the right person's name. So it does save time. So maybe we are going to come out of this with even more efficiency.
Which would be great, but it also, I mean, the question is still there of how you pull this off and you make it easy for people.
Right. But you are going to start, in theory, with lower numbers, right? You're going to have this big stadium, in theory, that's 20% full or whatever, so you're not dealing with as many people. So hopefully those people who are going to be guinea pigs to start with, right, they'll be the first people that are going to games anyway. They're going to be willing to work with you, I would hope.
Yeah, I mean, and you'll have to have that. You'll have to have people there to help. But I brought this up about, you know, what do we think and where do we think fans will be there. I don't ask me why I feel this way. I'm leaning towards, I think fans are going to be in the stands this fall. Maybe not full capacity. I think there's going to be, and with China doing it, they have 1,000. I could see there being some sort of audience. And it could be like with, you know, you players' families or something, you do that first. But I just have this inkling that there's going to be
some. Oh, it's not going to be just players' family. It's,
you think it'd be more?
Yeah, it's going to be. Well, first of all, I've already said this. Like, you can't have kids on campus, and students will be the first in there.
Sure. Okay.
Let me just say that right now. Students will be the first to be allowed into the games. Like, you can't have campuses back open and have these games. Students will be first priority, period. And I know you go, what about the big donors? Yeah, I get all that. They're important. But the students will be the ones that are allowed in first. So, no, I do think it'll be with, you know, with people in the stands. I just think it's going to be, you know, at a smaller capacity. I don't know what's the right number. I don't know. It seems like everything I've seen is like 25% capacity. So I don't know if that's the number they're going to go on. But, no, I do think that we will – it's not going to be in front of – I don't think the NFL, I don't think college. I just don't think these – I think MLB, I think there's going to be fans in the stands. It's just going to be limited.
Now let me raise another point that I would think is going to be part of this equation, right? Because I think you guys are right. If there's any way to do this, we're going to do it. We're going to do as much as we possibly can as a society. These want it. The people, I think, are going to want it if they feel safe. But part of it, and we've said this many, many times, but we still got to keep going. Like South Korea, by the way, congratulations to the Samsung Lions, Jace. They got their first win. Last night, 5-0.
Nice.
They're in the win column. The Lotte Giants are still undefeated at 4-0.
Wow!
And the Doosan Bears came up short last night. They got bombed 12-3.
Oh boy!
So the Bears are 2-2.
Okay.
So you know, they've played 4 games. But here's what I'm thinking, guys. Envision this. You know, we've got a long way to go. South Korea is playing because they have got a pretty good handle with testing and tracing and tracking and all that stuff. So would you be willing to go to a game? Let's say you want to go, Jace, to the Denver Broncos game against the Titans. And you can go, but you have to get there early because everybody that's going into the stadium has to be tested in some form. Maybe not a – who knows what a test will look like by then, but you've got to get somehow traced to make sure that Jace is safe. You've got to be screened to make sure that – you look symptom-free, and we feel pretty confident that you can go to this game taking all the safety measures. You got your mask. You're going to sit far away. You don't appear to have any symptoms. You know, would you do that if it meant you had to get there 2 hours early or something? Like, how long would you take to efficiently get, let's say, 10,000 people in there if you had to screen every one of them? That's got to be something they have to think about, right?
Sure.
Yeah. No
sure.
Doubt.
I mean, but I would do it. I mean, I would, you know, if I'm buying the ticket, then that's something you have to agree. You just have to agree that you're going to do, and it wouldn't stop me. But I also look at it like this. It's just me. It's just me going, you know, for
what,
you know,
about
for
a family, right?
Right. For you guys, it's different. unless you're just going by yourself, which I would think you wouldn't. Now, for us, if we're going as media, that's a different thing. But, you know, Darren, you took your whole family went to the Winter Classic. You were working, but your wife and son were there. That changes your way of thinking, I guess. So, I mean, I get that. That's a completely different process for some people. For me, it's just me. So, yeah, I would go and take extra time.
All right, we come back to wrap up this hour. There has been a guy out there that we've said, hey, maybe the Titans should look into as maybe the backup quarterback. Not sure about his availability since he just got surgery on his neck. We can discuss that. Also, the Titans have some news in their front office. We'll discuss on the other side to wrap up hour number two of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can check us out on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Darren McFarlane, hanging out, Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. So you heard Darren tease it before the break, Willie, that there is a quarterback that we've discussed on this show that could be a good fit for the Titans as the backup, but he's had what they call a core surgery. That is Joe Flacco. He's going to be out for a while, potentially to the start of the season. So I guess if you're the Titans, that probably rules you out. I would move on at this point. What do you think?
Well, I don't know if they were ever interested to begin with in Joe Flacco. He would seem like he would be a very nice fit for somebody as a backup. Now, this certainly complicates things. So I don't know. I mean, Joe Rexroth brought up Blake Bortles before. Honestly, you guys laughed. I think he'd be a good backup at the right price. If you have a budget and you stick to your budget, I think you can find that there will be somebody out there that can fit the bill that is an upgrade over what you have right now. Well, and Joe Flacco, I wonder what, you know, he's going to have to get in shape, work out, probably. I don't know if he would go in on a Tuesday like they have some of these guys in certain camps go before he finds a job, but he actually could be in a good position if he gets healthy and somebody all of a sudden has an injury in week one or two. You know, he could be a guy that's a phone call away that looks pretty appealing compared to other guys out there.
Well, and here's the other question too. If Cam Newton is willing to take a backup job and you're the Titans, do you look at? I mean, I think you have to make a phone call, don't you?
No, I don't think he fits the bill as a backup. I think he wants to be a starter, and he's going to go somewhere where he thinks he can be the starter.
But there's a report out there that he'd be willing to take a backup job. So that's the only reason I'm bringing it up. That,
well,
if he's willing to truly go be a backup,
I'll believe that when I see it. He doesn't strike me as a guy that believes that he should be a backup.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I guess you could find that out having a meeting if you're really interested there. And I don't know. I don't see that working. I see other teams that could use Cam Newton as a starter and is better than the starter that's sitting there. And I think Cam Newton's got to be sitting there at home saying, I'm better than so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so that are starting for these teams.
I mean, isn't he better than Jared Stidham? That's the one team that I get it, Belichick. Cam Newton, maybe not the best match made in heaven, but if you're New England, I mean, that to me seems like a no-brainer to at least talk to him if they haven't already. I don't know.
That makes sense to me. I agree. It is a very different quarterback market than we usually see for those reasons. I'm still intrigued about the backup position, just like you guys are. For the Titans, I think there's got to be the right veteran that should be added to the mix to compete with Woodside, and then in theory, you know, the rookie from Hawaii, McDonald. Yeah. He's not going to be your backup. That's not a way to build a team that's trying to win right now. You can't have a rookie be your backup.
Yeah, and I'm
Woodside. You got to have all kinds of confidence, like Bill Parcells did in Tony Romo, that you got something special there. That I haven't seen that when I've watched him in the preseason games. He looks okay to me, but I don't know what distinguishes Logan Woodside from Alex Taney or Engel Martin or any of the other quarterbacks that have, you know, looked good in preseason games from time to time. But that's not my area of expertise. That's more of a John Robinson's got to see something and say, you know, nobody knows who Logan Woodside is, but this guy actually, we can see him being the backup.
Yeah, and there are stories like that all the time. Story, you know, so they maybe they
I don't
know
about all the time,
don't.
But there are stories like that. There are sure. There are guys who turn into solid backups. Like Matt Moore has been a backup for a long, long time. It's not like he came out of the NFL draft and everybody was all excited about Matt Moore, right? He had to work his way up to that role.
Other news from the Titans. Now, go ahead.
This is a pretty interesting story, Chase. Yeah. Where you're going here.
Steve Underwood, who has been the president and CEO for them for a long time, he did retire before and then came out of retirement when Amy Adams Strunk took over as the controlling owner and has been in that role for the last several years. He will retire again. He's going to stay on as a consultant, but will not be the day-to-day president and CEO. So they have elevated Burke. Is it Nihil? Is that how you say the last name? He has been the general counsel. He will be the new president and CEO of the Tennessee Titans after Steve Underwood will step down as the full-time from his full-time role and be more of a consultant. So, yeah, it's a very interesting story.
I've had a lot of thoughts about this position, and we always use Sean Henry as the baseline. Right? Sean Henry, visible, out there, trying to make connections, trying to lead the franchise off the ice, right? Do everything he can to be a force. Steve Underwood has been exactly the opposite, right? Behind the scenes, you almost never see the guy. Now, he goes so far back with the organization, going back to their days in Houston, that when the team, for those of us that can go back to this time, he used to be more visible when there was all the legal stuff and transferring the team from Houston to Nashville and all the stadium stuff. That's when you saw him in the limelight. Then, of course, he went away for a while and came back. But since he's been back, he's hardly been out there at all. You almost never see the guy, right? And so now I'm curious about Burke Nihil, if that is how you, it's either Nihil or Nihil. I believe it's Nihil, but. So, Chase, you go to more games than I do these days. Have you ever met him? Do you know who he looks like?
I'm just being honest. I have no idea who he is. I mean, I'm just...
And so, now, he's
got
an opportunity.
In the next 10 years, if Chase kept going to games, he still wouldn't know who he is because it wasn't going to change. I mean, that's just...
With Burke Nihil?
No, I'm saying with... I thought you were asking about Steve Underwood.
No, he was asking about Burke.
No, I mean, listen, Steve Underwood has served a big purpose. I've said my opinion on him for a long time. I think they have missed out. He's retired. What has he really done since he came out of retirement anyway? I don't know what he does behind the scenes, but in terms of being a driving force and helping cultivate the fan base and be innovative with how to bring the most out of the franchise. He has no impact.
He's
at
absolute
all in the,
zero
in the public eye.
When it comes to being out in the public, a zero. What he does behind the scenes, I know he's a smart guy, and I'm sure he has done a lot of things behind the scenes, a lot of good behind the scenes for a long, long time for the Adams family. But when it comes to what you just said, Willie, being out in the public, being, you know, anything to, like you said, cultivate a relationship with the community. Just an absolute zero.
Yeah, and I've met him a couple times. I mean, you guys obviously knew him better than I would, but he's every time I've talked to him after my initial introduction, he was aware of what I did and where I worked, and you know, obviously Floyd probably helped that of him being a part of things here. But I saw him at the AFC Championship game. But to your point, he's not. To the level that Sean Henry is out in front of everything with the Predators,
you couldn't be more polar opposite. I mean, honestly, you couldn't be North Pole, South Pole is Steve Underwood to Sean Henry. And I mean, that's how far those two are, how different they are.
Sure.
Completely different.
And does everybody have to do it like Sean does it and be greeting people when they walk in the building? No.
No,
I mean,
but you can be somewhere in the middle.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
100%.
If that's not you, then the Titans still have this gaping hole of somebody to play that role, even if it were Eddie George, right? I've been saying this for a long time, too. Eddie George could be your front and center ambassador for the team, a great team executive that could help cultivate the fan base. They just haven't gone down that road. So I don't know what this guy does. He's a lawyer, right?
That's exactly Nihil. Right.
Yep. And so I don't know if it's a strong suit to do radio interviews and go out and have a lot of meetings and connect the community and be front and center everywhere and lead. I mean, I'll be curious to see.
Well, what
but
was
if
Steve
it's more
Underwood?
Of the same, then they
Steve
need
Underwood?
To find. Well, that's
exactly
a lawyer.
An attorney.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I mean, you can put the puzzle together in a different way. But this is an area where I'm curious if anything's going to change with this. But this is also an opportunity for if this is more of the strong suit of Nihil, then they could use a figurehead like that that could be a force in public relations because they need to fill those stands eventually, right? When we get back to the point where we can have crowds, they got a fan base issue.
Eventually. That should have been the subject front and center 5 years ago. Right? Or the last 5 years.
Of course.
I mean, look, it's what you brought up, Chase, is fair. You don't have to – nobody's asking somebody to be Sean Henry-like, okay? But you can be somewhere in between. That like I said, the gap between the two in the same role is the Grand Canyon. Steve Underwood is completely a behind-the-scenes guy. And in that role, especially when you're not selling out games – If it was circa 1999, then okay, you don't need somebody out there doing that stuff because you know what? It didn't matter. Everything was sold out in 38 minutes, so it really didn't matter to that point. Even though the Titans it didn't stop them, they were very good about their community work back then, and they're certainly a lot better today. I'm sitting here. I'm not acting like they're not doing it because the players have been great. They're way more out there in the community. Then they, you know, that it's starting to feel like the old days again. But there's still more work to be done. There is, but they are definitely way, way better than let's say where they were sitting about 10 years ago, when we were like, who's over there? Who works over there? Right? Like, what are they doing?
We did that bit. Remember when I was producing? We did a bit on the show where you said, and people thought we were having issues because you said, well, the Titans ownership group. They have spoken, and you named all the names that we had never heard of, and it was crickets. It was silence. And that's what it was. Now, I will give Amy Adams Strunk credit because since she took over as the controlling owner, it was a position that I don't think she necessarily asked for. She didn't have any training for it, and she has come a long way and she's not the face necessarily of the franchise, but she doesn't have to be. She is visible. She's got a place here. You know who she is. And she has grown into that role. Now, I think that it would behoove them to have somebody other than John Robinson be that corporate face that you immediately go, oh, Tennessee Titans. Okay. Yep. Know who that is. And that way she can play the owner role because – I've said this too. I don't need her to be Jerry Jones. I don't want her to be Jerry Jones. Not everybody needs a Jerry Jones. Just you need Derek used to use the example of Steve Bisciotti that you knew that Steve Bisciotti was the owner of the Ravens, but he talked maybe 3 or 4 times a year, and that was fine. You had Ozzie that was more or less the face from the corporate side of things. So I don't know who this guy is. I'm going to learn. Congratulations to him for being elevated to this role, but I don't know how public he's going to be, and just time will tell there.
I hope that he's much more visible than Underwood was publicly. I hope. I mean, my goodness. Sure. I hope he doesn't
he's
take
been
his
there for
cues
5 years.
From, yeah, I know, but I hope he, that's what I'm getting at. I hope he doesn't take his cues from what he's watched Steve Underwood do publicly.
I would agree with that.
You know,
but I don't know.
I think we're all curious.
All right, we will come back. You just made the list to start hour number 3 of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.